This Week in America with Rick Bratton. Issues that matter to you. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Everyone knows George Washington was the first president, the face of the dollar bill, a general, crossed the Delaware, led the Continental Army to victory over the British. The Smithsonian Channel miniseries Washington tells a very personal story about the life and evolution of one of history's most iconic leaders. World-renowned presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning best-selling author Doris Kearns Goodwin is executive producer of Washington. The miniseries brings to life the man whose name is known to all, but whose true story is understood by few. America's historian-in-chief, Doris Kearns Goodwin, executive producer of Washington, with us next on This Week in America.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with the best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. Operators are standing by. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. That's 800-298-0306.
Do you love watching sports? Well, how would you like to be able to take your favorite sports with you and watch them anywhere? In your house, on your computer, even on your smartphone for one low price. With National Programming Service, you can. That's right, for one low price, so low we can't publish it, you can take your favorite sports anywhere, anytime with you. And we even give you free installation and free premium movie channels. Don't wait. Call National Programming Service right now. You could be up and running and watching your favorite sports and shows in just a few hours. Remember, call in the next 10 minutes and ask about our special radio offer and learn about free installation. Call right now.
800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. That's 800-425-8166.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast. This Week in America, history's three-night miniseries event, Washington, tells the story of how a fatherless young soldier, full of personal ambition, becomes a leader of men, willing to sacrifice all for the common cause, bringing to life the man whose name is known to all of us, but whose epic story is understood by few. Executive producer of Washington is Doris Kearns Goodwin, considered the foremost authority on presidential leadership, 7 critically acclaimed and New York Times best-selling books, awarded the Pulitzer Prize in History for No Ordinary Time, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, The Home Front in World War II. Some of her books have been adapted into miniseries and films. Known for her ability to bring history to life, a PhD in government from Harvard, also taught government at Harvard for 10 years. A noted sports journalist as well, in fact, was the first female journalist ever to enter the Boston Red Sox locker room. That was back in 1979. Frequent media commentator, America's historian-in-chief and executive producer of Washington, a three-night documentary miniseries, Doris Kearns Goodwin, our guest on This Week in America. Doris, a pleasure. Welcome to the program.
I'm very glad to be with you.
So excited about this miniseries. And what was it about this story, this particular project, that really interested you?
Well, I'd always really wanted to study George Washington. I mean, he was the one presidency who set the standard for all the rest of my guys that I spent 50 years studying, Lincoln,
yes.
Roosevelt, and LBJ. And yet it just seemed too hard to imagine that I could add something by myself by just doing a biography on him when I had so many wonderful biographies I'd already read by him. So when history approached me to be part of a miniseries, it just seemed, oh, how great this would be. I could work with fellow historians. I could work with the people at history. I could work with the producers. And the accelerated pace would mean that all those people working together, it could be produced as it was in 18 months rather than my normal 7 or 10 years. So
yes.
I learned so much about George, and I really feel like he became one of my guys in the process of these last couple of years. It's been a great adventure.
Well, that's interesting, because I would think you would know just about everything about George Washington. And you said, I hope the viewers will be as captivated by his life and story as I have been. Were you surprised by anything, new facts that you uncovered working on this project?
Now, I don't think I had fully appreciated a couple things about his youth. I mean, number one, I knew that his father died when he was 11, but I hadn't realized how that threw off the path that he would have been expected to follow. His two older half-brothers had gone to London, become educated, and instead, Washington's formal education stops at the age of 11. But he goes out in the field, and he becomes a surveyor, and he gets interested in land, and he goes into the military at the age of 22. He's commanding a mission for the British king. So he's experienced not in schooling, but in war. You know, as Colin Powell says, General Powell, in the series, you know, that's where his experience came from. He saw people dying. He saw the dead. He knew early on that war wasn't a romantic adventure, the way someone else who might have still thought of it that way heroically through literature. So I guess I was surprised at the numbers of mistakes he made when he was young. I shouldn't have been. All people do. But how he grew, and the process of growing is really the arc of the miniseries. You see him becoming a leader who learns from the past, learns from his losses, and is somebody you really can identify with once you know that side of him.
Well, it's interesting because it's said that he sort of set the template for future presidents. Talk about that. One of the things I know you discuss is the fact that he made mistakes, acknowledged mistakes, grew from those, and became a better leader because of those. How did he shape the presidency?
Well, it's really fascinating to know that when he gets into the presidency, nobody's even clear what this president is supposed to be, much less even what his title should be. You know, other people wanted him to be called His Mightiness. Can you imagine if that's what we were calling our president, or His Highness, or His Sacred Majesty? Finally, they agree on president, and then John Adams is apoplectic. He said, oh, there's presidents of garden clubs. He'll have no dignity. But, of course, it becomes Mr. President. And then the question he had to decide for himself is, do I accept dinner invitations? Am I supposed to shake hands with people? You know, you're not supposed to be a king, but what are you? What kind of clothing should I wear? So what kind of people should I surround myself with? And all of those decisions he makes become so much the precedent for so many other presidents. The fact that he leaves after two terms is huge. He wants to go back to Mount Vernon. He could have left and had three terms, four terms. He could have been there for life. He could have been a king, as General Powell says about him, but he chose a peaceful transfer of power. So those daily decisions then become imprinted in the fabric of who our president is.
Presidential historian, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Doris Kearns Goodwin, our guest on the program, executive producer of History's three-night, six-hour miniseries, Washington. He's described as a reluctant leader, and he was also ambitious in other facets of his life. Talk about his reluctance to take on this awesome responsibility.
Well, it's true that he had ambitions when he was younger, but at first, I think they were connected to wanting to have land and wanting to grow things on
yes.
the land and become a planter. That's where his real sense of pleasure came from. But he did start out on these missions for Britain. And his ambition at the beginning, which is so true for so many young people, was more for himself. He wanted to make a name for himself, to get a reputation. And that's when he hurries some of the decisions made in the early days of the war, especially when he gets into the French and Indian War. But the great thing, if you become a good leader, is you can reflect on those experiences and you can learn from them. And when he gets into much later battles, he has much more patience. He knows to surround himself with people who can argue with him. And he still always wants to go back to that Mount Vernon, to the love of his life in a certain sense. But the wonderful thing for me in watching the film is you're getting a combination of the historians who know him well. I mean, I could stand on their shoulders because they knew all the things about him. But then there are actors playing these people in between the historian's bites. Pretty seamlessly, they've managed to put it together. So you can watch him talking. There's a wonderful actor, Nicholas Rowe, who plays George, and I like him. And you feel like you sense, oh, my God, maybe I know George Washington. And then they have these great actors who play the British people. And you feel like you're watching a movie, but it's a movie that's that's solidified in the words of the historians. So you feel authentic at the same time about what you're watching. It's a pretty good combination, I think they've been able to pull off.
And you have some personal letters, you know, excerpts from some personal letters. That really tells us a lot about the person in his own words, doesn't it?
Oh, there's nothing better than letters. I mean, when I do any research for any of my books, you feel like you're just looking over the shoulder of a person who's writing the letter. And you get some of his personal letters to Martha, so you can get a feeling of their relationship. And then there's this amazing letter when he's on his way to the presidency, when he admits to a friend that he feels like he's going to his execution. That's how anxious he is about this new position he has to take on and create of the presidency. We don't often think of him that way, as so vulnerable. You know, but he said, firmness and character are all I can give. Well, firmness and character was what was exactly needed at that time.
Well, it was. In fact, one of the experts says he understood if he failed, the country would fail. Talk about how he dealt with this awesome responsibility. He's shaping, as you just said, the presidency. Nobody knew how to respond to the president. He's the one that shaped it.
In fact, when they create the presidency in the Constitution, it's much more spare than what they do with the Congress, where it's more spelled out. And that's in part because they knew he would be the president and that he would figure it out. But it was, as you say, an awesome responsibility. And there's lots of anxiety surrounding every act of his, knowing that the future will be looking at him. I think all the founding fathers shared that feeling of future. And it can be a very positive thing, too, because if you're imagining how future is going to look at you, you're trying to be worthy of those people in a generation later that will look back on what you did. All these people had a sense of fate. They weren't concerned so much with celebrity as they were with heroism and fate. And thinking about the future can be a very positive thing, because ambition for self then becomes ambition for the greater good. And that's when a leader becomes not just a good leader, but a great leader. And they go through that transition. Many of them do. Hamilton, Jefferson, Washington, you watch them doing that during this time.
I got about a minute left. They all had a vision, Washington in particular, of what the American people could become. If they were to look at us now in 2020, what grade do you think they would give us?
Well, the most worrisome thing for Washington clearly would be the extreme partisanship that we're experiencing today. Indeed, in his farewell address, he warned the American citizens about the baneful effects of party spirit, the spirit of revenge, the sectionalism. And he said that that spirit could open the door to foreign influence and corruption. I mean, it is so ridiculously relevant today. And that was the address that he left behind to the people, because second term of his presidency, the parties were beginning to be formed. Hamilton on one side with Washington and Jefferson on the other side with Madison. Partisan papers began to be developed. You'd only read the paper of the people you liked. They used to send the letters, the papers that were against Washington, to his house, even though he unsubscribed, so he'd have to look at it again and again. So we see the beginnings of what we're full flowering right now, which what we saw during the Civil War, when the country broke apart, when partisanship became so extreme. And I think if George were back today, he would say that warning was the most important thing. You've got to remember your common American citizens above all.
Excited about the mini-series, History's 3-Night, 6-Hour mini-series, Washington, Doris Kearns Goodwin, executive producer. Doris, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us on the program. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I was so glad to be able to talk about this, because I really have had a great deal of fun with it, and I think they've all done a really good job. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
Make sure you like This Week in America on Facebook, and also you can follow This Week in America on Twitter at TWIA Radio.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. World-renowned cardiologist and internationally recognized pioneer in cardiac disease prevention, Dr. Arthur Agatston, introduced us to the South Beach diet 17 years ago. Quickly, it spread across the world, recognized as one of the healthiest ways of eating, and the South Beach principles have stood the test of time. More than 23 million copies of the South Beach diet and its companion books are currently in print. And now the original South Beach diet is back and enhanced with the latest science. In Dr. Eggerson's newest book, The New Keto-Friendly South Beach Diet, rev up your metabolism and improve your health with the latest science in weight loss. And back with us on the program, Dr. Arthur Eggerson, author of The New Keto-Friendly South Beach Diet. Doctor, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Great to be with you.
This is really exciting, the new book. Now, the original South Beach Diet is back, as I say, enhanced with the latest science. Why did you decide to update the South Beach Diet now and make it keto-friendly?
Well, there's really been an explosion of scientific evidence over the past decade or so, and we're taking advantage of that with our cardiology practice. We've made changes, but it was really it really started with an experience of mine. It was my realization I was truly addicted to sugar, and it was reading some of the latest research from a friend, Dr. Robert Lustig, who wrote the Hacking of the American Mind, about how we're addicted, that sugar addiction is similar to alcohol, to cigarette addiction, even to video games, and it all works through the same pathway in our brain. So after a very healthy dinner one night, we had a blueberry pie for dessert. I was inhaling the blueberry pie, and my wife told me to slow up. My son said, "Dad, what are you doing?" I slowed up, I stopped, and then later when everybody cleared the area, I snuck back into the kitchen, and I consumed the whole pie, telling myself that, well, blueberries were antioxidants. So here's a cardiologist writing diet books, lying to himself. And what I learned from Dr. Lustig at the time, that I was truly addicted to sugar, which for so many of your viewers is important because it's not your fault. It's not a lack of discipline, which is what I always thought it was. So what we did, we prolonged the first phase of the diet long enough. That's the more strict phase of low carb, and that gives us a time both to get rid of our addictions, and also it teaches our enzymes that burn fat to be more efficient. It takes more than a few weeks. It takes a month to many months. And when I did that, I started feeling so good physically and mentally. Our patients describe it, and I describe it like a fountain of youth. You feel better, you look better, you think better, and we understand why. And we also added intermittent fasting, and for some people, as we use in our office, we do complete ketosis. That's really strict. You should do it in consultation with your doctor. So we integrate several strategies. And the results have just really been fantastic. So it was time to update.
With us on the program is Dr. Arthur Eggerson talking about his new book, The New Keto-Friendly South Beach Diet. You have a new classification of good and fat fats as well, good and bad fats. A couple minutes left in the program. Talk about that, because this is important as everything is in your new book.
Yeah, part of the explosion of science was that, in particular, full-fat dairy is actually good for your heart, helps you prevent diabetes. So you shouldn't be going for low-fat yogurt, for low-fat milk. Full-fat is healthy. Think of mother's milk. That's the one type of nutrient that's absolutely made for man that comes from our mother's milk. It's high in saturated fat. It's really a keto friendly, and also with meat, including red meat, the saturated fat, that increases your total cholesterol, but just your large cholesterol particles, where it's the small cholesterol particles that are made when you have too much sugar that actually cause heart disease. And so this is a lot of very important new science. And so we classify a lot of the saturated fats now in the good fat category, and the so-called vegetable oils. There's more and more evidence, even when they're not hydrogenated, they become easily oxidized. Those are squarely in the bad fat category. So we've changed to some degree, the original classifications of good and bad fat based on new science.
Applying the latest science, with us on the program, Dr. Arthur Agatston. His new book is The New Keto-Friendly South Beach Diet, Rev Your Metabolism, Improve Your Health with the Latest Science of Weight. The book is available wherever books are sold. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Great to have you as always. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
You're welcome. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. Operators are standing by. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. 800-298-0306. That's 800-298-0306.
Imagine this is your money and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. They want your money, and guess what? They can legally take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash and we're going to take it from you. So what do? Fight back by letting our team of experts at the Tax Helpline work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws and will fight to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket.
800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. 800-932-1597. That's 800-932-1597.
Do you love watching sports? Well, how would you like to be able to take your favorite sports with you and watch them anywhere? In your house, on your computer, even on your smartphone for one low price. With National Programming Service, you can. That's right, for one low price, so low we can't publish it, you can take your favorite sports anywhere, anytime with you. And we even give you free installation and free premium movie channels. Don't wait. Call National Programming Service right now. You could be up and running and watching your favorite sports and shows in just a few hours. Remember, call in the next 10 minutes and ask about our special radio offer and learn about free installation. Call right now.
800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. 800-425-8166. That's 800-425-8166.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. The internet has been an amazing invention that has undoubtedly changed the world in more ways than we can think of, as we all spend tons of time online, at home, and at the office. But not all of those ways, unfortunately, have been positive. So much of our private lives and information get transferred over the internet. It's increasingly important to make sure you're keeping your information safe. Safer Internet Day reminds us to protect ourselves from the online dangers and make the internet a little safer for everyone. To help us improve our online security, Google cyber expert Scott Westover joining us on This Week in America. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
This is such an important conversation. As I mentioned, danger lurking everywhere online. What steps can we take to protect our online accounts?
Well, first and foremost, I want people to know not to find internet safety to be daunting. You know, it can be a little bit intimidating, but really staying safe online, the best way to do it is really going back to the basics and following some simple best practices.
How do we get started with that? Let's start with passwords. And I know it's difficult to remember where I park the car when I go into work, let alone 40 different passwords. How do we juggle all of these passwords? And a big problem is we have a tendency, most of us, to use one password multiple times.
Yeah, no, that's a great place to start, Rick. I mean, according to a recent Harris poll, we found that 66% of Americans reuse their password across multiple sites, and it's for that exact reason that you mentioned. You know, it's very tough to keep track of these various accounts. But at the same time, you don't want to be using the same password for your fantasy football league that you would be using for your bank account. So one tool that's available is password managers, which are either available as an app or they could be built into your Chrome browser. And what they do is they take the guesswork out of remembering your passwords by automatically creating a strong password that is then stored in the app. So when you're logging onto a site, you basically don't need to do any remembering. So it's the digital equivalent of having your passwords written down on a Post-it note.
And you talk about a two-step verification. It's a struggle for most of us to have one step. Talk about two-step and why this really, that gives us an extra layer, doesn't it?
Yeah, so two-step verification, you may either recognize that through receiving a text message from your bank account when you're logging in from a new device, but there's also physical security keys, which are an even stronger layer of security. So what those do is, when you're logging into your site, you may enter your password. It'll then prompt you to plug in your security key into your computer, which will allow you to access your account. And the reason they're important is if your password does happen to fall into the wrong hands, someone trying to log into your bank account, for example, wouldn't actually be successful because they would be lacking that second factor. And on Android, we even allow you'd use your phone as a second factor, so you don't need to necessarily carry around an additional key.
These tips and many more at google.com/security. You can log on to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and go directly to the security tips at google.com. One thing you have there, and this really is very simple to do, in security questions, you say sometimes we need to consider using fake answers, which might throw off somebody who's trying to hack our account.
Yes, I mean, I think we've all been there where, you know, favorite food is a security question and you're tempted to type pizza. That might not be the most difficult thing to guess in the world. So it is important that you make sure that the answer to your question is not highly guessable, isn't available on social media, like your mother's maiden name might be out there online. So whether or not you use something that's completely false, I don't think that's the most important point. But being sure you use something that is truly unique to you and couldn't be guessed or discovered online is really important.
It's important for us to take care of our online security. How about for our kids? And you've got a great program at Google, Be Internet Awesome. Talk about that, because this really lays out everything we as parents need to be concerned about when our kids are using the Internet.
Yes, I mean, kids, it's hard enough to get them to do their homework, let alone study up on Internet security, which is kind of why we created Be Internet Awesome. And what Be Internet Awesome is an online program that basically gamifies learning about security. So it's an interactive game where your kids will do various tasks to learn about things like phishing, which are emails or messages that are meant to impersonate someone you might know or trust with the goal of stealing your password. It also covers things like creating a strong password, as well as being conscientious of what information you share on social media and that sort of stuff.
Cyber expert for Google, Scott Westover, been a guest on the program talking about Safer Internet Day, google.com/security. Great place to get this and more information. You can take the Google security checkup and find out just how vulnerable or not vulnerable you are. Scott, great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us today. Great tips. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Rick.
You're listening to This Week in America. You'll find us online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.